You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. News and commentary.
Feb 17, 2021. Gun control is still in the sights of the Democrats. The last Gallup poll taken in November shows Americans still divided. 57% support stricter gun laws, but that's really a four-year low. Now experts are saying President Biden could use executive authority to restrict background checks and regulate authority to slow down arms sales. He did not sign gun control as among those dozens of executive orders when he first got in, but Biden officials are apparently meeting with advocates who want to push and demand for gun reform. Second Amendment advocates say Biden does not have the authority to ban assault weapons, however they're classified, or magazine capacity. But he could use, not by executive order anyway, but he could use regulatory authority to restrict guns without input from Congress. We need to keep an eye on that. Second Amendment rights are critical. And you also need to know this. President Biden recommitting that he wants to pass amnesty for 11 to 22 million illegals living in the U.S. We have 17 million Americans jobless at this point. And yet Joe Biden says, I really want to pass amnesty for 11 to 22 million illegals. And no one bothers to ask him, what are you going to do about the 17 million? Well, they didn't on that town hall meeting last night with Anderson Cottonmouth on CNN, nor did they press him when Biden made the claim that, hey, you know, when we came into office, we didn't really have any vaccination available. Yes, you did. You got vaccinated yourself. 90 days, I should say, a full week. Let me correct that again. A full 3 weeks before you were sworn in, and you got your second shot just before you were sworn in. And yet he gets away with that lie on stage with Anderson Cottonmouth. They don't call him out on it. Don't expect them to hold the line with Biden at all. Do not expect that. In the meantime, regarding illegals, the Biden's Department of Homeland Security has now been telling everyone, sending out emails, internal emails, the staff can no longer use the terms illegal alien, nor use the term alien. That's a memo signed by a new acting director inside the Department of Homeland Security. Can't use that term anymore. By the way, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki confirms it's going to be at least a couple of months before Biden will welcome any foreign leaders to meet at the White House, even though he's been vaccinated for coronavirus. She said, we'll do video meetings and so forth, but he probably will not have anyone actually in to see him until maybe a couple months. Severe weather continues to hamper a large section of the nation. In Texas, still 3+ million are without power. Other parts of the nation also suffering. Parts that have been spared are now going to see severe weather hitting them, especially the Northeast. And in fact, it's also affecting the arrival of Moderna COVID-19 vaccine to Florida. They were expected to get into Florida, but they're not because of the weather. Florida Governor DeSantis spoke about the delays at a news conference, pointing out again that this massive winter storm sweeping across the U.S. is to blame for having to delay the shipments. We now know that CNN and NBC each paid an Antifa activist, John Sullivan, $35,000. Each of them giving him $35,000 for his footage of what happened during the Capitol riots. They paid for it and presented it as news. Now, the fact that they had it on the air, and they want to pay for it, that's their business. But you think they'd make it part of the story? No, they did not. It's just now beginning to come out. They paid for that footage in particular as a shooting of the protester. The woman, Ashley Babbitt, was shot by a Capitol Police officer. And, of course, he's also being charged, the guy that got the money, the Antifa activist. He claims, I'm just there to document. Investigators say, no, you were also active in it. And, of course, today word came that Rush Limbaugh, legendary media icon, passing away today at the age of 70, losing his battle with lung cancer. In the next hour, we're going to spend more time on Limbaugh and his impact on the Republicans, liberals, and our country.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
Most of us are taking precautions to avoid COVID in public, but what are you doing to make sure your home is free of COVID? Wellington Environmental is the answer. And here's the great news. Wellington's average cost to professionally treat a home, less than $300. Less than $300. And the cost for treating most offices, not much higher. Be ready to copy a phone number to get on the schedule as soon as possible. First, let me remind you, if you want your own professional fogging device, Wellington sells them, priced $500. But say you heard about it from Larry Connors, save $100. If you want your home or office professionally disinfected by Wellington, here's the number, 314-644-4930. Again, get on the schedule early, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Be well with Wellington, Wellington Environmental. My sponsors keep this program on the air, so my thanks to John Bill Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest, best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Bill Roofing, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
I guess I grew up on an older road, a pedal to the metal, always did what I told. Until I found out that my brand new clothes are came secondhand from the rich kids next door. And I grew up fast, I guess I grew up mean. There's a thousand things inside my head I wish I ain't seen. And now I just wander through a real bad dream, feeling like I'm coming apart at the seams. But thank you, Jack Daniel's, old number 7. Tennessee whiskey got me drinking in heaven. And
this is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Trump supporters have taken over the Republican Party. The Republican Party can no longer say that they don't agree with the insurrectionists, with the bigots, with the racists, with the white supremacists, with the anti-Semites, because that's what they have clearly shown through their actions, especially over the last 5 years.
So says CNN anchor Don Lemon Fruitcake, saying that Trump supporters, first of all, that Trump has taken over the Republican Party. I don't think Mitch McConnell would agree with that. And it may or may not be the Republican Party moving forward. It may be more Trump Party. But, yeah, there are many Republicans and more independents and many Democrats who also like what he did in the 4 years he was in office and expected more as he moved into a second term but did not get it. But now the idea is they've gotten rid of Trump. We've known this storyline from the beginning. The next step is to trash anyone associated with Trump, and the best way, again, is pull the race card. It's easy, it's handy, it's ready. And so he says, Republican Party, you can no longer say you don't agree with insurrectionists. Yes, I can. You can't say you disagree with bigots. Yes, I can. You can't say you disagree with racists. Yes, I can. Can't say you disagree with white supremacists. Yes, I can. Anti-Semite. Yes, I can. By the way, Don Lemon Fruitcake, why don't you ask AOC and the rest of members of the squad, in particular Ilhan Omar, about their anti-Semitism, endoring Louis Farrakhan, who has said basically nasty things about the Jews. Why don't you do that? Well, that's not in our playbook, Larry. That's right. But they're going to continue using this because the idea is Trump did not get impeached like they wanted in the Senate and found guilty. So they're still fearing that he's going to be a threat down the road, either himself or endorsing and helping others. So you got to polarize anyone that might have been associated with him. And there may, I'm sure there's some who walked away. I did not like what happened at the Capitol Hill, but I don't like a lot of things Trump said or did during his administration. I've always said that. But I like a lot of the results he did get, where the economy is and America first, and the attitude that we will not simply bow down to another government. You know, Joe Biden has made it clear, saying we will not deal with China as Trump did. No surprise there. I'm not surprised, are you? So the idea now is attack not just Trump, Trump voters, anyone associated with him one way or the other. And I'm telling you, it makes no difference if you are a racial minority or if you're a homosexual who also supports Trump or you're transgender who supports Trump. It makes no difference. You're all classified as racist, homophobic, anti-Semitic, period. You have no chance and option to discuss it. You just have to live with it. Well, today we lost a strong voice to speak out and fight against that with the death of Rush Limbaugh. I want to spend more time on Limbaugh before we wrap up this hour. But the attitude of the left about the passage of Limbaugh, when they're telling us that we need to be more inclusive and we need to understand and help support each other, really? And yet some of the remarks that are coming out from those who are rejoicing over the death of Limbaugh. Within minutes of his death, there were numerous tweets out. The world's better without him. Limbaugh was a lying scumbag. I mean, all these kinds of this is what you get. This is supposed to represent a better world. A nicer world, like Biden says, and bring in unity. You got that going on. You got Don Lemon saying, no, don't. You can no longer say you're anti-racist, anti-bigot, because if you were a Trump supporter or of that ilk, you cannot be that way. Of course, the other day, Lemon Fruitcake is also trying to lecture us on morals. Are you aware of what they're doing inside of our schools at this point? If you're talking about really and truly getting rid of racism, would you not start by saying, how about we just quit talking in the difference of black and white? How about we talk about Americans, regardless of your color, regardless of your gender, your religion? But that's not what is happening. Dateline, New York, an Eastside community school in Manhattan, now using a curriculum written by an associate professor of African American studies at Northwestern University in Illinois. And it's been presented to parents. It's going to be part of what they're going to teach the kids. And what are they teaching? Well, the professor says there is a regime of whiteness and there are action-oriented white identities. People who identify with whiteness are one of these, and he has an 8-point category. He said, it's time we build an ethnography of whiteness, since white people have been the ones writing about and governing others. I have to admit, I guess I did not know there were 8 different white identities. Did you? Nor did the kids in this East Manhattan school, but they're going to be taught that. The New York City Department of Education admits that the school, which caters 6th to 12th graders on the Lower East Side, have seen some of the material. They say they gave it to every parent first as a series of materials meant for reflection, food for thought, and impressing that anti-racism and the celebration of diversity is at the core of our work with young people. Well, I got to ask you, does this show racism or anti-racism, and does it celebrate diversity or not? Here are the 8 white identities as described by a professor at Northwestern University. You begin with white abolitionist, depending on which way you read the chart. Let's read it right to left. No, I'll tell you what, let's go the other way. Let's go with the worst, white supremacist. I think we mostly know what white supremacists are and what they stand for. Then there's white voyeurism. Do you know what that is? It's defined as someone who would not challenge a white supremacist. And then, of course, you have white privilege. Sympathetic to a set of issues, but only privately. Won't speak or act in solidarity publicly. Then you have the white benefit, those who have benefited by being white. We have the white confessional. Now, that's an interesting white confessional. What exactly would be white confessional? I'm looking through some of the material they presented here, and I don't see it right away. It's just another term they threw in there, followed by white critical, white traitor. I don't know if that's a traitor to other races, the white, and white abolitionist. Those here are eight categories of white. This is a learned professor, a higher institute of learning, that he wrote this stuff. He's entitled to write what he wants. If the university is going to put him on the payroll and let him do it, that's fine. But now it's being peddled to kids in school. Do you think there's anything I just described in laying out those details that suggest bringing people together? Because when you point out kinds of things like that, are you really doing anything that's helpful? And here's another thing about this school. The racial makeup of that East Community School, that East Side Community School, is 55% Hispanic. 55% Hispanic. 18% white. 15% black. 10% Asian. 2% of other during the last full school year. So we really don't see that many whites getting this information. We're getting it mainly the Hispanics. Now, I wonder how the Hispanics regard that. This is not doing anything to make our nation better. This is the kind of stuff that parents should stand up and say, do not teach my kids that. How many times have you been around a schoolyard, a playground, and their kids, they may be as old as 10 or 12, they may be younger, and they're all kind of playing slides and so forth, and there may be a spat or two, but I've never seen it happen on the basis of color. It's just the kid decides, I was playing with it first. It makes no difference the color of the kid that comes and wants to play with it. Who teaches kids this color? Who teaches them? Adults. Learned professors, apparently, like we got here. Kids are not born with a racist attitude or a division attitude. They may or may not even recognize a skin color difference until someone else brings it and puts it in front of them. I remember years ago, my children were younger. I want to say 6 and 8. I've told this story before. You've heard it. I'm sorry you're going to have to bear with it again because it makes the point. I was on television, and at that time you had the TV guide that was being distributed, sold on a basis that you could see what's coming up on the TV channels each time. And we were running an ad in it. My co-anchor, Susan Kidd, a black woman, clearly a black woman, had an Afro style. We were a good team, a great team. I had her over the house for dinner, and she, you know, met my kids. They all got along great. And then my children came to me the following week or so and said, why did they do this to Susan? I said, what are you talking about? Look at what they did in this picture, Dad. And, of course, in the picture, I look pretty white in the TV guide, and she looks a little, well, not really black, kind of a grayish black, something like that, not black black. And they said, why did they do that to her? I said, what do you mean? Well, why did they color Susan like that? I said, well, because she's black. And my kids looked at me, both of them, like, she's not black. See, they think of black as something like the true crayon. I mean, like a black coffee cup. So they don't see it unless people start pointing it out and making a big deal out of it. And if Don Lemon Fruitcake is going to say, if you were a conservative, you can no longer claim that you don't agree with white supremacists and you got to admit you're a bigot, what's he going to say about Joe Biden and what Biden said last night in this town hall meeting? You know what Biden did? Biden was talking about the coronavirus vaccine rollout. He said the big problem is Hispanic and African Americans' internet illiteracy. He said not everybody in the community, in the Hispanic and African American community, know how to get online to determine how to get online. In other words, he's saying they're not smart enough to know how to use computers. I think that's as racist as anything could be said. Now, depending on their age, I may not. If they're really old, be they white or black, they may have a trouble doing it. And if they're really, really young, they may have a hard time doing it and understanding it. But he just flat out says, not everybody in the community, in the Hispanic and the African-American community, either distant or inner city districts, know how to use and how to get online. In other words, you don't know how to use a computer. You don't know how to get online, which suggests you're pretty stupid, does it not? Do you think he meant that? Of course he didn't mean that. I wouldn't put that on him, but I'm just asking, if you're going to call out one group for anything you want to, here's a perfect example. That sounds to me pretty racist, Joe Biden. Joe Biden has said some things in the past which certainly qualify as racist, but I'd give him a pass on that particular thing. And then in our schools, we have them peddling transgenderism to children and using cartoons as well. Please stand by for that story.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
Jimmy's in the back with a pocket of heart. If you listen close, you can hear him cry. Oh, Lord, heaven knows we belong way down below. Sing it.
Oh, Lord, heaven knows we belong way down below. Way down below, way down below.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
If you have children or grandchildren, you might be certainly aware of Blue's Clues. That's an American live-action animated education children's TV series premiered on Nick Jr. back in September 96. And for a long time, it was the longest-running Nick Jr. series until it was surpassed by Dora the Explorer. And now Nickelodeon has announced a reboot of the series titled Blue's Clues and You, which premiered this last November. It has basically received numerous awards for excellence in children's programming, educational software, licensing, nominated for 9 Emmy Awards, syndicated in 120 countries, 15 languages. If you walk by and saw it on the TV, you think, oh, that's cute, kids watching cartoons. Blue's Clues shows a dog and things of that nature. Well, there are things that are happening on there that you need to be aware of the next time. Tristan Justice of the Federalist pointed this out, stating the new Blue's Clues is committed to revealing a lot of clues about the left-wing dogma, a gender identity. The cartoon puppy mascot of the educational series teaching children ages 3 to 5, taking on a new topic outside the traditional realm of simple numbers, shapes, and letters. It's all woke social justice activism of gender dysphoria. The Alphabet rebooted Alphabet song claims that P is full of pride. Different pride flags representing pansexuals, lesbians, bisexuals, asexuals, gender-fluid individuals, non-binary individuals, intersex, and transgender people. But yet, Blue's Clues and You still appears, she writes, appears exclusionary by omitting flags representing genderqueers, polysexuals, demi-romantic people, polyamorous individuals, and the Black Lives Matter pride flag. Have you had a hard time following what I was just saying? Can you imagine 3- and 5-year-olds sitting there watching it on TV? What are they getting out of that? Whatever sinks into those young minds at that point. Is this a time to be talking about kids, about sexuality, arbitrary ideas of gender? In fact, we still have not enough rights covered. One writer in the New York Times says we need to add to it. The puppy mascot is a heroine for LGBT rights, but also needs to be expanded to LGBTQ1+ rights. Community in England expand the acronym to LGBTQQ1P2SAA. And I have no idea what that is. I have no idea what that is. But I do know this, and this is something serious. When they're talking about this is a woke approach to gender dysphoria, I'm going to give you a clinical definition, basically. It's a state of unease or generalized dissatisfaction with life. For adolescents, it's often depression, mania, anxiety disorders, and, of course, it can become major. It can have causes that are not due to any kind of disease. It might have to do simply with financial difficulties, difficulties in personal or work life, response to tragedies in the news. It can lead to some serious points in a moment, but this gender dysphoria they're talking about, this is an idea of pushing that those who are transgender will experience gender dysphoria because they're having distress between their biological sex and what they think they are, or what they think should be, or what they want to be, or maybe what they would have been. Listen, I've said before, someone is having that struggle inside themselves, I feel for them. They need help. They truly do. I can't imagine it, but I'm not going to discount that they have some problems like that, but they do need help, medical help, professional expert help, psychiatric help, because it, in addition to just feeling lost, hopeless, losing appetite, weight, and so forth, it can lead to suicidal thoughts, to harm themselves or others. So they're plotting all this. They're putting all this in front of these children at ages 3 and 5. Now, where do you think that's going to pay off down the road and how that's going to affect those children? You think a 3 or 5 year old knows enough to make difference in transgenders? Maybe they need to re-question? No, they don't. Coming up, a big issue that got overlooked earlier this week. Stand by, please.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Throughout the trial, you denied that Mr. Trump had a role in inciting the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol. You argued, first of all, that there was no insurrection. But during your closing arguments, you seemingly admitted that there was, in fact, an insurrection, using that word, saying that that was not up for debate. What role did the former president play?
You didn't understand the case. I used the word.
I'll give you the opportunity to clarify, sir.
Sure. I used the word insurrection in my closing argument when quoting the charging documents. What happened at the Capitol on January 6th is absolutely horrific. But what happened at the Capitol during this trial was not too far away from that. The prosecutors in this case doctored evidence. They did not investigate this case, and when they had to come to the court of the Senate to put their case on, because they hadn't done any investigation, they doctored evidence. It was absolutely shocking, I think, when we discovered it and we were able to expose it and put it out. I think it turned a lot of senators. The American people should not be putting up with this. They need to look at who these House managers were. And look to see whether these are the folks they want representing them. It was shocking to me.
Those are the words of one of the attorneys in the trial defending Trump in the second impeachment in front of the Senate. And he was making his case known that he thought what they did was, as he said, shocking. Now, there have been some new developments since that. That was Michael Van Der Veen, one of the attorneys. as he was being interviewed by Lana Zak, an anchor from CBS News. Now, they had just won the case, and she's interviewing him, and she's questioning some things he brought up. And as he quickly pointed out, when she said, well, you said there was no insurrection at one point, yet you said it in the closing arguments there was, he said, no, you're not paying attention. I was reading what they had presented, that was their allegation. Now, look, I can see this from a lot of different ways, and I'm going to try to put both my 50-plus years in journalism, TV, radio journalism, on at the same time I'm talking to you as a conservative radio host at this point. Reporters make mistakes, obviously, and can either ignore it or accept it and apologize or recorrect it, or maybe they're not that far off, they just didn't word it correctly. That happens, especially if it's live. I would give her a little slack for that, but he said, you didn't follow the – you don't understand. And that statement itself kind of dismissed her, didn't it? You don't understand. Well, that was just the beginning of it. This broke the other day, and I have not had time to spend on it because of so many other things going on. But I wanted to spend some time today because before we wrap up today, we're going to talk about Rush Limbaugh and what he meant to conservative journalism and to America itself. And when I say conservative journalism, I'm talking about those who identify that, yes, they are pundits and they are not being just journalists. They are being conservative, like the liberal journalism as it's used. If you're actually a journalist, you should not be displaying conservative nor liberal. But here's Michael van der Veen, who's pointing out how she did not exactly follow what he was trying to say. By the way, the pressure on him has been pretty severe, as has others who have been at one time associated with Trump. He has been criticized by numerous attorneys in the Philadelphia trial bar because he defended Trump. He's the treasurer of that organization in Philadelphia. But he's apparently going to resign now from the Philadelphia trial lawyers, that position, because there's so many inside other attorneys who don't like what he did. I would think attorneys would recognize he's doing the client's duty. But one of the issues that came up, doctoring evidence. Now, that became a big issue as he presented it and as he was then trying to explain to Lana Zak of CBS. Here we go.
Let's follow up with a point that you're making right now about the House managers, as you say, doctoring evidence and the argument.
They didn't deny it. I put it in front of them three times. To be clear for our viewers,
what you're talking about now is a check mark that's a verification on Twitter that did not exist on that particular tweet, a 2020 that should have actually read 2021, and the selective editing, you say, of the tapes. Is that the doctored evidence of what you're speaking?
That's not enough for you? That's not enough for you?
I'm not a juror in this trial. What I'm trying to be clear for our viewers is what you're referring to, because not everybody has been following.
It's not okay to doctor a little bit of evidence respectfully.
I have not said it is okay.
Ma'am, your question is
I want
turned.
To be clear for our viewers.
Listen, what has
I want to be
to
clear for our viewers about what exactly you're saying when you say doctored evidence.
The media has to start telling the right story in this country.
Now, I want to put a stop there because I want to clarify something. I will defend Lana Zak saying what she said and what she didn't say. And she said, I was trying to clarify for the audience, when you say doctoring evidence, what you're referring to. Now, on the other side, van der Veen saying, you think it's all right to doctor any evidence, a little evidence? In other words, if they were trying, as they did at one time, trying to present a tweet coming from a verified account when it did not come from a verified account? Was it a mistake? Was it intentional? Either way, it was wrong. And if they doctored it, you cannot doctor evidence. But what she's trying to say, I didn't say that. And I have to agree, she did not say that. She said, for the benefit of the viewers, I want you to understand what he's referring to. But he raised the other issue then about the media bias. Let's pick up that issue.
The media is trying to divide this country. You are bloodthirsty for ratings. And as such, you're asking questions now that are already set up with a fact pattern. I can't believe you would ask me a question indicating that it's all right just to doctor a little bit of evidence. There's more stuff that we uncovered that they doctored, to be frank with you. And perhaps that will come out one day. But we won this case.
That was the key point. We won the case. And he said there's other doctored evidence. Well, if it does come out, then obviously would, I assume, be more than them trying to pass off, if that's in fact what they did, a verified Twitter account when it wasn't, information from it, or misstating dates and or maliciously, viciously editing, slanderously editing video to present an image that wasn't proper. No, you cannot have doctored evidence, period. But at the same token, I will have to defend her saying, I didn't say that. I'm simply pointing out to the audience what you're referring to. But this issue about the slanted coverage of media bias, this is a gold mine for any of us who are concerned about the future of this country.
The media should be looking at that in a square, straight way. The straight way. When I watch the news, I watch one station and it's raining. I watch another station at the same time and it's sunny. Your coverage is so slanted, it's got to stop. You guys have to stop and start reporting more like PBS does rather than a TV news show that doesn't have any journalistic integrity at all.
And I think a lot of us would echo that. Now, whether or not you choose PBS as your reference point would be something else. But this media slant and issue, we have seen it, and it exists on both sides. But it's been predominantly from the left, and it's going to continue under the state-controlled media operations of the Biden administration. But Michael Van Der Veen, one of the attorneys representing Trump in the second impeachment, said, enough is enough.
I'm tired of the biased media on both sides, left and right. What this country wants, what this country needs, is this country to come together, to take the left and the right and find a middle ground and start responsibly being our public officials, our elected officials. And one of the reasons why they do it is because of the media, because the media wants to tell their narrative rather than just telling it like it is.
He's absolutely right on that point, and you know it. But the problem is there's so many of them saying, well, that the what he's talking about doctored were minor things, but minor or not, as he said, you cannot doctor anything. And that's where we come to the conclusion of the interview between Michael Van Der Veen and the CBS news anchor Lana Zak.
Frankly, I'm tired of it. I'm not a media. I'm not in front of your cameras all the time. But what
right.
I've been subjected
Sir,
to this
I understand.
Last week.
I understand, yeah. And I've given you the opportunity.
You don't want to hear the truth. Yeah.
Okay. I've given you the opportunity. I will remind you that what I said was that for our viewers who have not been following all of the hours of this trial, mm-hmm. to be clear about what you are speaking about. And I understand
I'm speaking
that
about
you seem
the House manager's
upset.
Failure to prove their case. That's what I'm telling
and you.
They
you
weren't able to prove their
the
case.
Acquittal. You have won the acquittal of your client.
Yes,
and if you'd
I
like
did.
To continue to talk about this conversation, we can have that discussion.
I don't need
but,
to.
But for me to ask a question,
a slanted question that was set up
question.
To say it's okay for them to cheat. That was your question. Isn't it okay for
that.
Them to cheat?
I didn't
it's
say
just
that.
A little bit. You
no,
said, to be fair, it was only
fine.
A check on the Twitter. That's what you said.
Well, that pretty well ended the interview. It was over. But the points made on both sides, the passing of Rush Limbaugh, and my comments about what he's added to our country when we continue.
You can follow Larry on Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA. Ladies and gentlemen, Catherine Limbaugh.
Hello, everyone. I know that I am most certainly not the Limbaugh that you tuned in to listen to today. I, like you, very much wish Rush was behind this golden microphone right now, welcoming you to another exceptional 3 hours of broadcasting. For over 32 years, Rush has cherished you, his loyal audience, and always look forward to every single show. It is with profound sadness I must share with you directly that our beloved Rush, my wonderful husband, passed away this morning due to complications from lung cancer.
That is Rush Limbaugh's wife, Catherine, announcing live today that Rush Limbaugh, conservative talk radio personality and legendary radio figure, had passed away, lost his battle with cancer at age 70. He had revealed on his radio show last year that he had been diagnosed with advanced lung cancer on January 20, 2020, almost a year ago now, well, a little over a year ago now. He said he had noticed he had shortness of breath. The next month before the diagnosis was made public, President Donald Trump awarded Limbaugh with the Presidential Medal of Freedom for a, quote, tireless devotion to our country. And, of course, the left came yelling and screaming, how dare you, you basically have made that a worthless honor. Presidents can make their decision as to who they want to select for whatever reason. But because it's Trump and it's because it's Limbaugh, they made a battleground out of it. The Rush Limbaugh program began 33 years ago. Basically began with no more than 56 stations at that time. Now 600 stations nationwide, 20 million weekly. His voice obviously big, and his statements carried weight. His views carried weight. He shaped a lot of opinions. He helped a lot of folks understand where they stood when it came to this nation, be they conservative, independent, or Democrat. Limbaugh, born in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, and began his career in 67 at 16 and just being a helper around a radio station. Eventually got to a disc jockey and ended up working at a small station south of St. Louis while attending high school. But then he wanted to do more. And he began to look for a way to grow the program. And he quickly, once he did some local radio gigs in Pittsburgh, Kansas City, Sacramento, he ended up at WABC shortly after the Fairness Doctrine was repealed. And it was there that the Rush Limbaugh show actually became a major source of information for many and opinion. See, in 87, the FCC had repealed the Fairness Doctrine. That policy had been in place since 49, and it mandated both sides of controversial political issues had to receive equal time on radio programs. Well, it was dropped. And so he was allowed to do what he wanted in his program, as I do on this program. I don't have to present the other side. Now, if I'm doing a newscast when I was a news anchor, yes, I wanted to make sure I did. But as a commentator and offering opinions, you don't have to do that. In watching some of the print and the coverage from some of the leftists there pointing out some of the other issues, and I don't want to gloss over them. They were big at the time. He had accused actor Michael J. Fox of exaggerating his Parkinson's disease at one point. He constantly attacked President Obama, fanning the flames of birtherism. He found his success originally when Ronald Reagan dubbed him the number one voice for conservatism in the country. And for a period of time, he had a TV show, if you recall. But it all came back down to Rush Limbaugh speaking his mind, his opinion, and conservative radio. Limbaugh was generous with his wealth, according to Forbes magazine, listing him as ranking fourth among the most generous celebrities. He apparently gave at one point $4+ million to the Marine Corps Law Enforcement Foundation, 13% of his earnings at that point. also raised millions of dollars for those in need in other cases. And yet, of course, he is very divisive, especially when it came to politics between the left and the right. He did not tolerate stupidity, did not tolerate laziness, did not tolerate indifference even. He always said he had a close relationship with his audience, and I believe he did. He set the trail for many to follow. He opened up conservative radio, and it has never been the same since. The question now is going forward. His business format probably cannot be duplicated by anyone for what he was making and how it was being presented, but the views themselves and the direction, and just sometimes just holding people accountable, hopefully that will persevere. It's one standard I want to try to live up to on trying to make sure we're very direct with you. We may have disagreements. He certainly had disagreements among his audience as well. But in the end, what are we doing for our country? And to that extent, I think he served a great purpose for the country. Some would disagree. That's your opinion, as it is my opinion. Rush Limbaugh passing away. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.